We're going to transition over to Dr. Sylvan Waller, a long-term friend of mine, a great innovator and entrepreneur in town, chief medical officer of Health Lab, but you have lots of different titles, but that's the one we'll use today.
Sounds good.
So, but tell me what you're up to now. Let's give my audience 30 seconds, a minute on what you're up to.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So, I provide primarily advisory services for high growth healthcare technology companies. I've been doing that for a number of years and love the space. I've been able to collaborate with you on a couple of things along the way, and that's been great as well. But primarily, you know, helping healthcare technology companies understand how to collaborate with larger partners, how to, you know, find product market fit, help them refine their strategies around what they're doing. And then a lot of times, you know, build the services. So they may have some really smart folks who come from the technology side of things, but they're moving into healthcare and they're really looking for deep healthcare expertise. And I always say, you know, pairing technology and how engineers think about problem solving with folks who have deep healthcare expertise is incredibly powerful, and you get really unique solutions. And I think that's sort of, you know, where some of the companies that I've seen have really made significant inroads into solving some of the major problems in healthcare today. So primarily doing, you know, advisory work for high growth healthcare technology companies, and then also operate as a venture partner with Shadow Labs. We're putting on our summit on September 17th and 18th. And so we will be speaking about the future of healthcare there with a focus on technology as well. And you know, anyone who has specific questions about that, they can reach me, you know, after the show, and be happy to be able to connect them and give them more information.
Yeah, I'll be out of town, but I would love to have participated and certainly want to support it. So you guys have, what's the name of this Shadow Ventures? Is there Health Day, or what is, say one more time?
Yeah, so Shadow Ventures is the organization. Mm-hmm. And then we're putting on a summit, Shadow Summit.
That's it, Shadow Summit.
Yeah. On September 17th and 18th. And Shadow Ventures really started on the commercial real estate side, so build tech with KP Ready. And then we are launching our healthcare lab. And so the 18th, when we're talking about sort of the future of healthcare, we'll be talking about the launch of our healthcare lab as well. And we're really looking at bringing innovators and large healthcare enterprises together, helping large enterprises be able to innovate a little bit closer, bit faster, connect them with healthcare technology companies.
Love it. And I'll just, you know, give a plug for you personally. I mean, we were working on a venture together, and we couldn't pull it together because of the China, you know, they couldn't pull their side together. But I will say, Dr. Waller, what's great about you and why I really wanted to work with you in that venture, and I know we will do some stuff together, I'm sure, in the future, is you have great deep expertise, extremely smart and agile with how you think, but then also you get your hands dirty, and so you can operate. So it's not just, so you have great wisdom and vision, but also you operate. And so that's why we would have been great partners. You know, you've been a great chief medical officer in that deal and co-founder. So,
well, thank you very much. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to collaborate on the healthcare think tank that we've done over the years as well.
Oh, so that's right. We've worked a lot. You've been a phenomenal partner there.
So that's been great.
So yeah, we haven't brought that up at all, but I think so. We did. We will have another think tank coming up, probably the first week or the second week of November.
Great.
We're going to do it in person, but also we're going to allow for virtual dial-ins as well. So we're going to expand our collaboration. Then we do another one at HIMSS as well, and we're going to do that kind of maybe even on air. So we're going to have some fun. So it's going to be a big, a busy 6 months. But you've been a phenomenal partner in that from day one. You've supported the think tank and all that we've been able to build there. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I appreciate the comment. I mean, I think the fun for me is both helping companies with their strategy, but a lot of times these, you know, small healthcare technology companies are looking for folks who've been there, done that, and have deep operational experience. And so having been chief medical officer, COO of a number of different high growth healthcare technology companies, you can, you know, I always tell some of the folks that I work with, you know, I've seen the movie before. I can help guide you through, you know, avoiding some of those pitfalls. And that's really the, you know, the fun for me is to be able to help guide some of these companies and help them both avoid those pitfalls, but accelerate their growth and their go-to-market strategy as well.
It's excellent. So from your perspective, what healthcare or health IT trends are you seeing in the industry?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about it before, but I still strongly believe in the sort of macro trend around consumerism. I think, you know, consumerism goes beyond sort of price transparency and sort of the 1.0 version that, you know, was prevalent a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And Accenture had a good report out recently talking about sort of, you know, the healthcare consumer is here. And I think it's taken a long time to get to this point. But healthcare consumers are really looking for, you know, they're looking for access. They're looking for for transparency. They're looking for efficiency. And, you know, in some of the information I've seen in the industry recently, when they look at sort of the demographics, it was really interesting to see that, you know, most folks are dissatisfied or very dissatisfied with the existing healthcare infrastructure. And a lot of it comes down to access, you know, still 30 days to see your primary care doctor. You've heard me, you know, quote that before. But that's a major dissatisfier for most folks when they have a, you know, a question for somebody. And they need a medical professional to answer that. And they potentially need, you know, diagnosis and prescription. It's really hard to get. So we've really seen the rise of non-traditional, you know, modalities of care. And I think, you know, when we talk about sort of future trends, a lot of dissatisfaction with our current system. An interesting fact, you know, 85% of baby boomers have a primary care physician. 65% of millennials have a primary care physician.
Correct.
And Gen Z, born after 1997, it's like 50%. And most folks, you know, Gen Z and that group, when you talk to them, they don't want a primary care physician.
Right.
So they're thinking about healthcare from a totally different perspective. And I think we really need to make sure that as we're developing solutions for these folks, we take advantage of that in a positive way, meaning we're trying to deliver services to them, but we don't gate it based on a primary care physician. We're bringing the services to them when they want it, when they need it to solve their problems.
Yep. No, I actually helped start a company here in Georgia, Hip Nation. I mean, that's exactly, they're providing services on call for members of their health plan. I mean, that's, and I mean, it's exactly, it's on-demand care. You can go in person, you can go secure message, you can do a virtual visit, but it's all on demand. It's trying to address this. It's addressing all three of those demographics and sectors because care has changed. And, you know, the old, your father's healthcare, as we were talking about earlier, their children don't want it. They want care differently, and we have to serve it up the way that they want it served up.
Yeah, and so. I think there's an interesting quote, you know, I've heard many times sort of saying, you know, the future is here, it's just unevenly distributed. So when you think about things like Hip Nation and other companies that are, you know, providing those services on demand when people need them, that's very different than, you know, a traditional primary care doctor's office. And so I think a big part of it is, you know, consumerism, the trends, the continued trends around consumerism and adapting healthcare to those consumers instead of the other way around, asking consumers to adapt to, how we deliver care today.
Very good point. You just covered some of this, but what are a couple of best practices or strategies that you can share to help people navigate those trends?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a big part of it is around new models of care. So not thinking about sort of the traditional big box. And, you know, I had a colleague, from Piedmont Healthcare, who I talked to, and I know you had, one of their team members, one of their execs here earlier today, but they really talked about sort of, you know, a Chick-fil-A model, and that, you know, the old school model.
Was this Matt?
This was Matt. Yeah.
Matt Go. Yeah. That's
so
great.
So as you think about, you know, consumers, in their communities, if you have a big hospital, sort of the big box model, and you're asking all these consumers to come to the hospital, it creates, you know, all these barriers to care and friction because people have to come there. It creates, you know, queuing problems or scheduling issues. But if you bring the care directly to those patients in their community, right, like Chick-fil-A, getting out there, providing services where they're needed, you know, that's really valuable. And so, you know, again, I think that definitely resonates with a lot of consumers now who are looking at how do I get access that's near me? If it's, you know, if I've cut my hand and I need to get something stitched up, it's going to urgent care. But for a lot of the questions that are out there, it's how do I access care in a way where it's super convenient, right? It's on my phone. And we started with, right, you know, founded a company years ago that was really focused on sort of telehealth and focusing on video. We've seen a transition now to much more chat-based, integrating AI into what's going on. But those alternative models of care are really powerful. And that's where we're seeing significant traction with consumers these days.
So where would your point of data be? If you spread all this out and you don't have a primary care, where would your data reside?
That's a great question. I mean, I think there's a big push to be able to give consumers access to that data and say, it doesn't, you know, it's not Epic's data. It's not McKesson's data. It's not a health system's data. It's the consumer's data. That problem hasn't been successfully solved yet, right? Mm-hmm. Health Vault and things like that Microsoft came out with years ago didn't have a lot of consumer adoption because it wasn't really consumer friendly.
Right.
Apple obviously is tackling that now and saying, we want to be able to create the type of solutions where you can store all your health data here. So we know, you know, where you've been as a patient, mm-hmm. who you're getting care from, but more and more the coordination of that for not for super complex care, but for day-to-day bread and butter, mm-hmm. more and more of that is being put on the consumer and they want to be able to coordinate some of that. they don't do it. You know, we talk about population health. They don't do it in the most coordinated fashion, but they want to be empowered to know this is their data. They can control where it lives and that they have access to it.
But I can actually, yeah. So I'll pick up on that just from a standpoint of what I heard today. So there's two answers. I would say blockchain is going to help us with the security of that data. But now in the application layer, the API, basically right. What we brought up, you know, the ONC spoke about in depth today is opening up these APIs and forcing these APIs and for us to share this data at the consumer level. The consumers need to be able to do this through their apps. Right. And I think API is going to be in fire and these standards are going to be driving that empowering it. And so I think those two, and then, but you have to use blockchain and you have to use security in there as well. Because we want to make sure this, you know, the data is tagged securely and we need access to it, but it's got to be stored securely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, well, that was one of the challenges of Health Vault early on was, you know, they didn't have the interoperability that they needed. Right. They didn't have blockchain to be able to provide the privacy and security. Yeah. And consumers overwhelmingly still go for convenience over privacy and security.
They do.
Until they have an issue.
That's right.
And then they come back and go, oh, two-factor authentication. That's great. Yeah. A blockchain solution for their medical records. You know, that becomes more important after they've had a problem.
Right.
So our job is to build solutions that are private and secure and still give accessibility.
That's excellent. So in our closing few minutes, thinking beyond today, what do you see as a key strategy or trend that we must be ready to successfully navigate in 3 years from now?
You know, I think there's the old adage, right, of, you know, everything that goes up must come down. We have continued to see healthcare spending go up year over year. And I think all the industry experts see healthcare spending continue to trend up over the next several years in the short term. I don't think anybody's seeing, you know, a significant downward trend of that.
Right.
But when you include all the different stakeholders and you begin to, and again, it's not new, but the concept of moving from, you know, a sick care system to really a healthcare system, focusing more on preventive medicine, but doing so in a way that is, you know, again, providing care to the patient, you know, at the time that they need it. And so Virta Health, right, Iora, and some of these other models that are saying, we'll provide comprehensive care, but we're really going to focus on preventive services, right? It's the idea of not necessarily narrow networks, but being able to bring, right, the right type of preventive care to the patient when they need it, or utilizing technology to be able to deliver it to them when they don't even know that they need it. And one of the, you know, one of the folks that I've worked with in the past has some really interesting technology where they can passively monitor what's going on through your smartphone. And based on these digital biomarkers that they have, they can really determine, you know, how you're doing. They can determine when an intervention might be needed. And I think that type of appropriate passive monitoring and delivering technology and solutions to patients when they need it, even if they don't know when they need it, will become a bigger and bigger part of what we see.
That's excellent. And in your first part, you brought up, I think Beth even kind of touched on that as well, where we are going to have to see something significantly change here on the payment side and how care is delivered. And she brought up that, you know, not within 3 years, but within 10 years, we could see the fee-for-service gone and just really managing the patient and the entire cost. The term is out there. It's a capitated model or it's a risk-based model and it's all under one scope. And so you're paid to manage people and that's it. I mean, there's no bill for this and bill for that and bill for this and bill for that and surprise billing. It's just, you know, it's going to be managed much differently. And I think I agree with that. I mean, I had not thought of it from that perspective, but I do believe we will get away from fee-for-service in 5 to 7 years. We'll see a glide path within 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. And I've been saying that 3 to 5 years for quite a while now that, you know, value-based care is coming, you know, pay for performance is coming. So I'm a little more pessimistic around that.
Correct.
But I did spend a lot of time in DC over the last couple of years, really, you know, working with legislators to be able to make some changes to Medicare to see about, you know, getting alternative payment arrangements put in place. And I think the regulatory landscape and the reimbursement landscape do have to keep up. And I think that's one of the other key things that we'll see over the next 3 to 5 years. You know, consumer behavior is changing. The models of care are changing. Closer collaboration between payers and providers. And at the end of the day, the regulatory and reimbursement really has to keep up with that in order for us to deliver on the value proposition here. And that's the part that I'm really excited about. And that's what I'm seeing with a lot of these early stage companies.
That's excellent. Very good. Dr. Waller, thank you very much for joining us in studio, my friend.
It's absolutely. Great my to pleasure. See you. My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. And yeah, if people do have questions or want to discuss any more about this, they can always reach out to me and I'll be happy to help and answer any questions I can.
Awesome. Thank you.